Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 212 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcasting network and fanatics. Unusual for ourselves, a little bit of a different podcast today, with it being the international break and no game for the Blues, obviously, with it being FA Cup weekend. We're all grateful of that. I'm sure you'll all agree a little bit of time away from Everton is not a bad thing at this moment in time. But delighted to say I've been joined by a couple of Evertonian authors who recently released a book, The Unofficial Everton Timeline, 2014 to 2023, the Mashiri years. We've all lived it. We're still living it. It's still going on. Despite the best efforts of certain people to try and buy the club, but that's another saga. But delighted to welcome onto today's show Steve Dickinson. I'm from the Toffee Web podcast. Many of you will know Lyndon Lloyd. And Steve, I'll come to you first. Me and you have conversed quite a bit over the last few weeks or so to try and sort this out. It's great to finally get you on the show and have a chat around the book. And it's very apt, of course, given what's happening with this club, this moment in time. The 777 saga continues to rumble on. But the main question is, whose idea was it to write this book and why? And Steve, I'll come to you first.
Well, I think it was a happy coincidence. Happy in one sense, unhappy in another, that the thought about writing an article initially about the Mashiri came to me on the M62 on the way home from the 4-1 home defeat against Newcastle. And you remember that because it was after the Sean Dyche embargo on the buses arriving, the team bus welcomes. We had a team bus welcome for the Newcastle game and all the fans and everybody was really up for it. And from my perch on in the top balcony, you know, I was cheering away like everybody else. But it was a desperately disappointing game in the end. 4-1 defeat, few goals near the end. And I was driving home and thinking, how did it all come to this? What's gone on? So when I got back home, I started making a few notes. Didn't go to bed. And started thinking about writing this article. And I was looking at all sorts of sources, but for me, the best source of all for information about the facts of what had actually gone on turned out to be the Toffee Web News Archive. And of course, I'm on and off Toffee Web all the time, but you don't tend to go back to the archive. You look at the new articles, what's currently going on. And it's so well structured, and you'll be very embarrassed when I say, but Lyndon has done an incredible job of cataloguing contemporaneously the events that have gone on for all in all of our lives as Evertonians. So I started jotting all of these things down, and I wrote to Lyndon to say, look, this is bloody great stuff, this, Lyndon. And to cut the story short, we agreed to collaborate and not write an article, but to write a book, because there's quite a lot to pull together. And my idea was to not only write about events off the field, but to write about events on the field as well, and to combine them. And there really was no better source than the Toffee Web Archive for all of the match reports and after match reports. So we started noting it all down, getting it into chronological order. And I banged a few early drafts across to Lyndon, and then he did his magic at his end, and away we went.
And yeah, indeed, away you went, and it must have been. I mean, obviously, you sent me the book very kindly, and I've gone through it on my trip since work and things like that, and it's phenomenal the amount of information that's contained in the book. It's got to be said, you know, for the time that Farhad Moshiri, since he came in to where we are now, it shows you how much has actually gone on at the club. And to be honest with you, I think I said on our last podcast, I mentioned that we were going to be doing this show after our most recent episode, and said it's like a horror story. It would be suited to be released in and around Halloween, you know. And I think we could all agree on that in terms of where we are at this moment in time. But Lyndon, I'll come to you. Steve mentioned there, you know, the amount of information available on the Toffee Web website, and how much is contained there, how much you've pulled it together.
Yeah,
that must be and continue to be a real labour of love to actually get all that information in one place. You know, Steve's been on the internet, looks at it all the time. That then leads to a book. That must be a real sense of pride for yourself as well.
Yeah, you know, it really is. The pride that I get really sort of manifests itself in the feedback that I get from people who say that they can't live without it, which really is, you know, it's all the thanks that I don't need, really. I mean, I've been running an Everton website now for, what is it now, 28 years, I think. I think it was 96, and then I merged my site with Toffee Web, as was back then run by Michael Kenrick in 2001. And, you know, he shares the same nerdy, almost masochistic need to get all this stuff down and keep it as a chronological record of what's happened with the club. I mean, really, there isn't anywhere else like it. I wouldn't say on the web, really. I mean, I suppose Everton's own website will have its own archives, but there are certain things that obviously that the club won't report in the same way. So we've always felt that, you know, we have a sort of a unique stance and a unique opportunity to, as I say, to catalog, you know, the events of the club over what is three decades now. And yeah, I actually use it myself. It's you know, it's not just for other people. I actually use the website and all the stuff that we do myself, you know, to refer to when I'm writing my own articles and all the rest of it. So it just made sense that when Steve came to me with it, I thought to myself, well, yeah, actually that does make sense. And I'd never actually thought about writing a book. And so I was really, I was honored when Steve proposed it. And I left at the opportunity because I thought this was a really good chance to summarize as succinctly as we could. And it's almost 700 pages, and it's only when you get the physical copy, which when they first arrived, I was like, wow, this is a meaty tome. This is quite the doorstop. But it's as you said, so much has happened. And we kind of joke as Evertonians that it's never a dull moment and it's never boring with Everton, because, you know, particularly right now, it's almost every week there's a headline, and all of this obviously feeds into it all kind of funnels back up to the top. And the man who's overseen the vast majority of it, the man who came in with this grand vision, and now, I mean, obviously we have to see what happens with with takeovers and points deductions and the end of the season. But it's the club's really on a knife edge, and it's quite the story.
It is, and you know, when you start reading through it, you know, you go back to those times. Now, I remember where I was when it was announced that Farhad Moshiri had bought his stakes in the club. I was actually attending an FC United and Manchester game, believe it or not, because I was going to the Carl Frampton against Anthony Crotley fight. Sorry, Scott Quigg fight, I'm sorry, at the Manchester Arena that night. So we made a day of it, went to FC United and Manchester, went to the box, and then it was announced. And as an Everton fan, you know, we've been waiting for that moment for so long to finally get someone who comes into the club, who's got money behind them. And I felt an immense sense of hope at that particular point. And the book takes me back to that in terms of when it was all announced and Farhad Moshiri obviously talking about taking the club back to almost to the glory days and looking then to move grounds as we move further on. And you think, you know, the hope I had as an Everton fan at that time was incredible. And it's great that the book does take you back there because, you know, we just had a great season in 13-14 under Roberto Martinez. And myself, I mean, I'm nearly 40 years of age, but that season was still one of my most enjoyable seasons in terms of what I saw at Goodison Park and the youth that was on show and thinking, you know, if we can keep these players and develop these players further, we can really then look to break into that tough form. We were so close that season. So to see it then sort of spiral from that particular moment, Farhad Moshiri comes in, we try and throw money at the problem, and we all know what happened in terms of, you know, trying to literally buy our way out of the situation we were in and to try and get up the table and be competitive, and we are where we are now. But when you were writing it, Steve, did it take you back, and do you remember those times when you thought, when Farhad Moshiri came in, you thought this was a new dawn, you know, this is a brand new dawn for the football club, this will help get us back to where we want to be, back to competing again, back to being at the, you know, the, we, as I say, we were in a bad spot on the table, of course, but, you know, really challenging for trophies and things like that, because it's, as I say, for me, that's what really sort of brought it back home to me.
Yeah, I mean, my introduction to Everton was back in the 69-70 season. I'm really old. And my first game was a 2-0 home win against West Ham in that year. Alan Ball and Jimmy Husband, of course, Jimmy passed away this week, so that's very sad. But they were the goal scorers. So that's my benchmark going back to those days. And of course, we all had, you know, for those of us old enough, had great times in the mid-80s as well. And you're right, that period with Roberto Martinez in that 2013-14 season sort of ignited something after the fairly dour years of David Moyes. And he, you know, worked with the David Moyes defensive setup and added some sparkle. And of course, his masterstroke was bringing in Romelu Lukaku, which brings us to the kind of the theme of the book, in the sense that the unofficial Everton timeline theme came really from looking around at the final graphic on the official timeline, which was 2014, celebrating the signing of Romelu Lukaku. And ever since Moshiri came on the scene and was apparently introduced to Bill Kenwright in 2014, that's why we started the story at that point. But the official timeline just went dead, didn't it? The four sides of the ground, the official timeline goes around three sides of the ground, and the Bullen Road, the Gladys Street and Goodison Road. And then in 2014, with the signing of Lukaku, it just stopped. And that was one point that was noted, and we thought, well, what's gone on since then? And when Lyndon and I got our heads together about writing this book, I think it was initially called The Moshiri Years as the initial, but then the official, unofficial Everton timeline concept came to mind. And yeah, in those... in that period, 2016, when Moshiri finally bought his 49.9% stake in the club, we were all very happy at that time that we'd finally got our billionaire owner, and hopefully things were on the up.
You're totally right. And as I say, we all thought the same about things being on the up, and we all hoped that they would be. And, you know, over the timeline of events since Fahad Moshiri bought his stake in the club, there's been a few moments where we thought again, we had hope again. And again, the book reminds me of that. You know, even Ronald Koeman coming in was a funny one, because Koeman, we went after him and he had a good season with Southampton, and it was very much a case of we thought it wouldn't happen. I know I did. It did happen again. We were excited again. We have obviously Carlo Ancelotti coming to the club, and it was, you know, and James Rodriguez and Alan and Decore, and you think, you know, when some of the football we played in the early part of that was a 2020-21 season, that COVID season was incredible to watch. So we have had moments in the timeline where we've had hope, but there's been a lot of negativity, hasn't it? There's been a lot of, I say, false dawns. There's been a lot of mistakes made. And Lyndon, I know it's difficult to say, isn't it? But where do you think it's all gone wrong? Because let's face it, you know, Moshiri's tenure now, obviously, as the owner of the club, as he is looking to sell it, we're going to look back on that, where Bramley Moore should have been his legacy. It was always thought that we'd get to Bramley Moore, he'd then look to probably move on, sell the club, etc. Mm-hmm. We haven't even got there. The club is in, you said earlier on a knife edge at this moment in time as we speak. But where would you, if you could try and pinpoint it, where do you think it's all gone wrong?
I don't think there's one specific moment, because I think a lot of it has to do with the way that Moshiri has approached the project from the beginning. He's very much wanted to sort of feel that he could do it more or less on his own and make his own decisions, obviously keeping Bill Kenwright on to assist with that, to provide that kind of link with the past. And, you know, someone actually mentioned to me that, oh, you've let Kenwright off the hook a lot there. And my answer to that would be that without being a true insider, you don't really know where that kind of division of responsibility or who was making the final big decisions. I think a lot of it you can point towards Moshiri, and he obviously had people like, you know, Jurebchin in his ear, you know, these advisors. No one knows the extent to which, you know, Alisher Usmanov was sticking his oar in and having his own, you know, his own input. But whoever was making those decisions, I think you can see there's a pattern whereby just not enough expertise was brought on board throughout the project. You know, even to last year, we still had people who have come from within the club. And for better or worse, you know, you can look at their performance in different ways. But ultimately, I think we needed, if you look at what Manchester City did, they got serious operators in place. And forget about all what they've done. They've had all this money, but forget about all the money they've had, and forget about all the potential transgressions and infringements on the rules that they've done along the way. Just looking at them as a commercial enterprise and the way that they've run that club and the infrastructure they've put in place, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think we were all looking at Moshiri to bring in. And particularly with someone like Usmanov, with his resources behind him, you would think that they would be, you know, you think that we could have had some serious investment and some seriously professional people put in place. And I think that was perhaps his biggest mistake. If I look back on it, if I look back at one particular moment where I think that the project failed was with Ancelotti and those big signings. You know, we spent a lot of money that summer in bringing in Decore and Alan and Ben Godfrey and James Rodriguez, who, you know, we were all like, oh, free transfer, you know, from Real Madrid. And what it turns out that we were paying him, you know, ridiculous amounts of money. Every report that came out seemed to add another £50,000 a week to his salary. So who knows what he was on, but it was probably too much. And so that's where I kind of think that, you know, Moshiri came in and he has said, I think he said during the first independent commission, he explained that the idea was to spend big in the first three or four seasons with the aim of making the Champions League, and then the revenue takes care of itself. And I think if that had worked, if Ronald Koeman had been successful, if Marco Silva had been successful, or Ancelotti, as he very nearly was, had been successful, then I think we're looking at a very different situation. Obviously, we wouldn't be in the problems that we're in, the trouble that we are in now. But I think that he pushed the boat so far out in that particular season that when the gamble failed, it all backfired on him. And we've obviously seen it unravel very quickly over the last, from that moment on Boxing Day in 2020, when we were second in the table, having beaten Sheffield United. I think that from that moment on, it's just been all downhill since. And we have seemed to have, the descent seems to have gathered speed since. So I think that for me is the moment, that season.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We spent a bit of time in looking at Farhad Moshiri's key assumptions, the assumptions he must have made when preparing his business plan. And of course, a lot of people thought it's been so chaotic. Was there ever a plan? But I would say there definitely was, because of his background. He's educated in accountancy, a degree from London in accountancy. He'd spent 20 years working for management consultants and accountants before joining Ilya Usmanov, and then spending another 21 years in Usmanov's shadow, being his principal tire kicker of acquisitions that Usmanov was making around the world. So Farhad Moshiri definitely had a business plan. And so the question was that we asked ourselves, what were some of his key assumptions? And I think he quoted at one of the AGMs that money would be no barrier to success. Well, yes, it was. It clearly was. It always is. No matter how much money you've got, there comes a time when it runs out or isn't available. And he fell foul of that. He clearly assumed that Ilya Usmanov would continue to be the source of revenue. And that didn't work out. And it wasn't all his fault, of course. As Lyndon has said, with the invasion of Ukraine, 24th of February 2022, at that point for me, that was when the Everton project, that was the death knell for the Everton project, because overnight, the sponsorship money coming into the club and the planned naming rights money just disappeared. And so, that was really a terrible catastrophe. You could argue that Farhad Moshiri should also have anticipated that at some point in time, the Premier League would kick in harder with its financial fair play rules, because they'd introduced them, I think going back, UEFA had introduced them in 2009 and really just not applied them. So his working assumption was probably that they would not be applied and wouldn't be a serious impediment. And that turned out to be, unfortunately, a very false assumption as well. And the other two, I think, relate more to governance, that he said that Bill Kenwright would stay on indefinitely. And, with the benefit of hindsight, if Bill had listened to his own words, which he said in 2011, that he was looking for a rich individual to take over the club, and at that point he would be more than happy to step down, if he'd listened to his own advice and moved away from an executive chairman's role in 2016 or maybe 2017 after a handover, and had stepped back into a life presidency type of role, where he was the guy with all the contacts, and the knowledge and the background information. So should anybody need to give him a call, he'd be there at the end of the phone. But that would have been a very different role than being the executive chairman and being so hands-on, as he clearly was, with all of the transfers and the decisions about managers coming and going as well, which he did jointly with Farhad Moshiri. So his so I think Moshiri's decision not to change the guard was really fundamental importance. And I think the final one I'd just like to throw in is that Moshiri's decision not to appoint any independent non-executive directors really was a bad idea, because every board needs alternative points of view. And even when the opportunities arose, when Robert Elstone moved on and a new CEO was needed, when Sasha Rozantsev stepped down or disappeared as the chief finance and strategy officer, and when a non-exec with footballing experience was finally appointed, all of these people just turned out to be Bill Kenwright's devotees. So there were a lot of yes people around and very few contrasting views when it came to making key decisions.
I think that's a real key point, and it ties in with what Lyndon was saying as well in regards to when Farhad Moshiri came in, especially obviously when he became the majority shareholder as well. If you look at Manchester City, they cleared the decks. They cleared the decks and got proper people in. It wasn't just, you know, the term job for the boys is used all the time. And, you know, even to this day, I know I saw today with James Vaughan and his new role in the club and people saying another one of those jobs for the boys. And I mean, he's been there for quite a while. He's got his own qualifications, but I see the point. And that's one of the things we've discussed on our podcast is that when the investments came in, if you want to make a real go of it and you want to make it a success, have obviously your transitional period with Bill Kenwright, of course, like you said then, and then drop into a life presidency role with his contacts, but then have people who have got no affiliation to the football club, first of all, and they're not loyal to one particular person either. You know, that was the real key thing. And I think when we didn't do that, after having, as you said then, we had other chances to do it as well. That was always a little bit of a concern, because we remained in a way, even with money, with the tag of the People's Club and plucky little Everton and those kind of terms get bandied around, which frustrate us at the best of times. Well, certainly me. And we didn't approach it in the manner of a big football club and a football club that wanted to progress and wanted to get back to the top of the game. And this is what the book highlights for me is all those, as well as the moments of hope, you know, the missed opportunities that we've had along the way. We've had some bad luck. You've mentioned quite rightly in terms of Usmanov and the war in Ukraine. The fact of sponsorship just went overnight, and that was really the end. You know, I think Carlo Ancelotti was probably the final gamble as well, to be fair, because when a certain Spanish manager then came in, we spent £1.7 million on Damari Gray and got a few free transfers in. That was a clear sign of what was going on and you know where the problems lay. And it is when you go through the book and you go through all the things that have gone on with different managers and even certain games. You know, you go back to FA Cup semi-finals, the Everton should have done better again, and the missed opportunities there. It's a book that, for me, really opens my eyes further, because I think you just, at times, I'm probably rightly so, as football fans, you just want to just bob along and enjoy the football. That's what I want to do. You know, I've got no interest in finances. I really haven't, and I shouldn't have to. I shouldn't have to care, really. But the way the game's gone now and what's happened at Everton Football Club means that you've got to, you know, with what's gone on with the points deduction, the second charge, obviously, which we've got a hearing in the next few weeks on that, probably a second points deduction coming in. You know, what's going to happen in the summer to our, in inverted commas, our assets? They're probably going to have to be sold. To make sure, because we've got so much debt, got the stadium still to finance and finish. There's a lot of stuff going on now that fills my headspace. And this book, just as I say, it brings it all back again, and it really gives a great timeline of what's happened, why it's happened, opportunities that were missed, and where we are now. And I say it's a frightening read, as I said at the start of the show. It's a frightening read, but I think given where we are now, it's almost a must for people to understand what's gone on, you know. And you know, as I said at the start, I mean, obviously, Lyndon, the pride that you've got with the information you pulled together from Toffee Web over the years, but the pride that you must have seeing this book, you say it's a thick book, nearly 700 pages long. It shows you how much has gone on. But again, immense pride in pulling that together and telling the story that is missed around Goodison Park, because it stopped at Romelu Lukaku signing in 2014. And then there's nothing more. So you must look at this book and think, you know, this is the real story of what's gone on since that signing, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it is. I mean, we obviously couldn't remember and cover absolutely everything, but I think it certainly tells the story. And, you know, I doubt that it'll get much exposure beyond Everton, but I think it deserves to actually be read by people outside of Everton and the wider football world, because it's very instructive. Of how not to go about it in many ways. I'll reiterate, you know, what was said earlier is that he was unlucky in many respects, and the Ukraine invasion was only one part of it. I mean, he obviously had some players that clearly did not work out, like Yannick Bolasie for injury reasons. I'm not sure he would have been the perfect fit anyway, but obviously he suffered a serious injury. Jean-Philippe Gabamon cost a lot of money. And, you know, he went down with a serious injury. You know, we've obviously lost, I suppose we have to call him player X during that season. He's not been without it's bad luck. But I think that most clubs can probably point to things like that. Certainly the independent commission would say that there's plenty of things that clubs just need to roll with on a day-to-day basis as part of, you know, just the business of running football clubs. But you're right. It is something that I think both Steve and I are immensely proud of, just because of the amount of work that went into it. You know, it was a lot of work. And as you say, it's a big story. I've always loved the unofficial timeline concept, because there really hasn't been anything that the club would want to put on the outside of Goodison Park in those intervening years. But so if you want to know, obviously, if you didn't live it, or if you wanted to go back and relive it, then this book tells that story, fills in all those blanks. And you know, you wouldn't want Rafael Benitez's mug on the outside of Goodison Park, but in terms of the story, he's part of it. And you know, all the various things that went wrong and things that almost went really, really right.
One of the things for me that came out in the research was actually how impeccably well Everton fans behaved throughout this process. You know, Evertonians have had a bad press, particularly in the national media. And when you go back and you research it and you look at the polite and intelligent letters written to Mashiri, to Ken Wright at different times, the responses that came back way after Chairman Bill's letter and the response he got back from the fans, it was well done. And of course, we had a dreadful situation just before the Southampton game, with the way the club leaked some purport, you know, the headlock gate, whatever we want to call it. The Everton fans have been very badly treated, and yet they've been incredibly loyal and I think very capable in the way that they have responded. And yeah, I go back to my governance point earlier about who's on the board, who's the dissenting voice on the board throughout all of this. Frankly, nobody. The only people who really stood up and said loud and clear that enough was enough and things were not going well were the Everton fans.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate that before we went on, because I think that it's worth it's worth trumpeting, you know, that we dedicated the book to Everton fans for a good reason. And Steve's absolutely right. I mean, you only have to go back to the destination Kirby debacle, and and Keogh, and the way that Evertonians, when Evertonians know that their club is in trouble, they stand up and they come together. And it may only be a very strong minority, but I'm thankful that that core, what's the word I'm looking for? It's that strength, inner strength that the club has, and I think that's, we've seen that in the relegation battles, that the fans, more than anyone, have refused to let this club go under. And if they have anything to do with it going forward, they'll make sure that it doesn't going forward as well.
Yeah, and we live it every single week, and I think it's been easy at times. We've seen in the national football media that, you know, we've been labelled certain things, and the behaviour, like Steve said, there has been impeccable. You wouldn't see it at many other clubs, that is for sure. You know, you've got your club battling relegation now for three seasons on the spin. You've got a punch deduction. You've got us basically saying that, you know, what's happening at our football club is not on. You know, whether it be over the headlock situation, whether it be the conduct of the board, full stop, whether it be the fact that we found ourselves being charged. We were onto the board. We were onto what was going on. And we made our voice heard, and it continues to be heard now. And, you know, like you say, I think it's great that the book is dedicated to Everton fans, because sometimes we get lost in everything, don't we? You know, and it's a great story for those in the football media, what's happened at Everton and what continues to go on. It's fantastic for them in terms of getting people to read their articles, and after time, not even true, but it gets people clicking on links and reading their articles and buying papers and things like that. But for us as fans, like I've tried to get this message across quite often on shows that I go on and try and say, you know, you try living it. You try living what's happened over the last few years, especially, and see how you get on as a fan base, because it's been tough. It takes over. It takes over your mind at times. And like I said, I shouldn't have to care about Everton's finances and spreadsheets and things like that, and whether we're going to breach PSR. And that shouldn't be part of my makeup. I should just be going to the game, supporting my football club, buying merchandise, you know, travelling home and away if you can, having a chat down a pub with your mate after the game, and enjoying doing the podcast. And that should be my involvement, but unfortunately it's not. And, you know, the two of you will know, especially with your research as well, probably opened your eyes even further how poorly run the football club has been. As you say, how unlucky we've been at times, but how difficult it can be as an Everton fan, especially over the last few years. So I think it's fantastic, as I say, that the fans have not been forgotten in the whole thing. And I, for one, you know, I'm not a huge reader, but when it comes to books about football, and especially my football club, it interests me. And I think, you know, as long as the book is, it has to be to tell a story which has gone on. And from even telling the background to Farhad Moshiri and his relationship with Usmanov and about Arsenal and obviously his involvement there with Usmanov, through to coming into our football club and where, you know, what's happened since, I think it's a great read. But Steve, tell us where we can find it. Where can we buy it?
Well, the book's available on Amazon. Just search for The Unofficial Everton Timeline, and there you'll find the paperback and the Kindle versions. And soon enough, there will be an audiobook version as well. So for people who like to listen to podcasts and have things in their ear rather than sitting down and reading them, hopefully we will have a solution for you in the near future.
Fantastic. Who's doing the audiobook reading? Is it one of you two?
Yeah, that's the plan. The authors will read the book.
Fantastic. I look for, you know, something again. I like an audiobook myself. It's always a nice, as I say, on the way to work, traveling in the car to put it on. So I look forward to that. But what we'll do is we'll make sure we get the link out for the book. Obviously, the episode when it goes out, we'll put the link out. And everyone obviously get on there, but get your reading done for the international break. It's, as I say, it's a really, really good book.
We have to thank as well the readers so far who've turned the book into a number one Amazon bestseller. So in our football, in our category, we really do appreciate everybody that's bought it so far and given some fantastic feedback and great reviews.
Fantastic. Yeah. And Everton fans for you. Everton fans, you know, they support each other, and you know, it's great to see the book's doing so well already. Even, you know, it was only launched a few weeks ago, and fantastic, it's doing so well, and hopefully more and more people will buy it. It's a must read, given what's happening at this moment in time, and it's a very, very up to date account of what's going on as well. So please, if you can, the link's going to be put out obviously under the podcast. Check out both Steve's and Lyndon's Twitter as well. It's on there. There's links on there as well. And if you can, make sure you buy either your physical copy or get it for your Kindle, etc. But I thank you both for coming on and discussing the book. It's been a great chat. As I say, I love the book. So thanks for taking some time out of your evening to have a chat with me.
Thanks, Mike. That's great. Yeah,
thanks for having us on, and many thanks for the support of the book and the kind words. Really appreciate it.
We do indeed.
No problem at all. And that's us for today. We will be back, as I said, on the last podcast post Manchester United, wasn't it? Unfortunately, another defeat, as we know. But we'll be back ourselves after the Bournemouth game. Hopefully, after this warm weather training that the players are going through at this moment in time. Michael Keane scoring goals in training for fun, but looking at the videos I've seen today. So there's our striker for the Bournemouth game boxed off. So hopefully, a bit more positive after Bournemouth. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues. Three Opinions. One Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.